to the Google Calendar, and that will let you know who will be on for the rest of the show. And hey, remember, tomorrow really does matter. And have a great Monday. Thanks for listening.
Is that a bay window there?
See the one that's in the middle there?
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Hartley Carnes. After only 18 months in the number two job at the Justice Department, Paul McNulty is resigning. The Deputy Attorney General is the highest-ranking casualty in the controversy over the firing of U.S. attorneys. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen joins us now live. Andrew?
McNulty, his deputies, and the Attorney General's deputies were heavily involved in the process to fire the eight or nine U.S. attorneys whose dismissals last year now are the point of controversy between the Congress and the White House. And then McNulty helped make the problem worse when he testified last December before Congress in a way that opened himself and Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez open to criticism that they were either out of touch with what was going on at the Justice Department or worse, willing participants in a White House scheme to get rid of good prosecutors for political reasons.
So the latest is McNulty's going to remain at the Justice Department till this fall or until the Senate approves someone who could replace him. A certain amount of wildfire is good and natural for forests. What Florida's been going through, though, exceeds that.
Words just don't describe what they have done under very difficult circumstances.
It's Harvey Campbell in Columbia County, proud of the firefighters who have come to help and the work they've done. Correspondent Hari Srinivasan talking with firefighters today.
When I'm kicking my feet underneath here, there's still a lot of smoke coming up.
Yep.
So there could actually just be a smoldering fire underground.
Yes.
For days or weeks.
For days or weeks.
It's the Okefenokee Swamp Fire, already nearly 370 square miles burned and headed toward Lake City, Florida. President Bush, following Supreme Court edict, says his administration will make a workable plan to further cut CO2 pollution for cars and trucks by the end of next year.
I'm directing the EPA and the Department of Transportation, Energy, and Agriculture to take the first steps toward regulations that would cut gasoline consumption and greenhouse gas emissions from motor vehicles.
Vitamin D makes a big difference, including for your eyes as you get older.
University of Wisconsin researcher Nancy Mayer says this is the first time a link has been established between vitamin D levels and the most common cause of elderly blindness.
Having high blood levels of vitamin D were associated with lower prevalence of early age-related macular degeneration.
She says the benefits were most evident in people over 40 who drank at least a glass of milk daily and people who took supplements.
CBS's Barry Bagnato is in Washington. Eight states are asking MySpace to check its list of customers and pull out the names of registered sex offenders who could go through trolling for young people in search of new victims. CBS News technology expert Larry Magan.
The AGs are asking for two things. One is to track registered sex offenders, and that's doable. They're also asking to verify the ages of people who are using these services, and that's very, very difficult to do with current technology.
On Wall Street, the Dow gained 20.5 points. NASDAQ lost nearly 16. Oil prices $62.46 a barrel, up 9 cents. This is CBS News.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
From the crack of dawn to late at night, cops are on the lookout for seatbelt violations. It doesn't matter when or where you drive, wear a seatbelt or you will get a ticket. Cops are cracking down like never before. So remember, always buckle up or you will get caught day and night. Click it or ticket. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Tour de France champion Floyd Landis is fighting to hold onto his yellow shirt, fighting substance tests in an arbitration hearing now.
The two sides presented two very different views in the opening statements. The U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, which is the prosecutor in this case, told the arbitration panel that Floyd Landis's sample was tested properly, and every time it was tested, it came back positive for performance-enhancing drugs. The defense said the case against Landis is a disaster and labeled the science being used an embarrassment.
That's CBS's Steve Futterman in Malibu, California. Police in Gahanna, Ohio, say it had to be a senior prank. It's that time of year, and Big Boy turned up on the roof of Lincoln High School. 200-pound fiberglass figure of the chubby boy in red and white suspenders from a Big Boy restaurant there disappeared Saturday morning. It was found this morning surveying the educational domain from the roof of the high school. It's back where it belongs now. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Hey there, this is your old biker pal Smokey. I wanted to let you know about the great folks at GEICO. Their motorcycle insurance covers most kinds of bikes, and they have money-saving discounts. I also wanted to let you know that my voice is this deep because of all the bugs I've swallowed out on the open road. And finally, I want to let you know that I've decided to start dating again. Well, see you later.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. GEICO Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
Your name means a lot to you, but in the wrong hands, it can mean more to someone else. With Wachovia, if your identity is ever stolen, dedicated fraud specialists will work with you one-on-one to help recover any lost funds. And they'll stick with you until your identity is restored. Protecting your good name. Another feature of Wachovia Free Checking. Stop by, call 800-WACHOVIA or visit Wachovia.com. Are you with Wachovia?
Free Checking is for personal accounts only. Wachovia Bank N.A. and Wachovia Bank of Delaware N.A. Members FDIC.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Hello, Americans. Thanks for joining us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. I am unarmed, but extremely dangerous. We got a lot to talk about today. And first up, I want to welcome to KRXA 540, a brand new lineup with some great local shows, an expanded edition of The Show every day from noon to 2. And Deborah Lindsay has joined us with an hour-long program every weekday, 2 to 3 p.m., just in front of yours truly. And if you're listening outside of the Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz area, you can log on to KRXA 540, learn more, and catch the live stream, too. On today's program, we kick it off with Jameson Foser from Media Matters, rating the media's work last week. Yeah, they sucked again. We'll tell you how. Also on today's program, did you know that some nuclear waste is winding up in landfills? We're going to talk with Diane Tarigo from the Nuclear Information and Resource Service about a new study they just issued today. Get your Geiger counters out and we'll check the local landfill. In our second hour today, we talk about Turkey and Iraq. Turkey is the scene of protests in favor of secularism. And we're going to talk to a professor from the University of Colorado. I'm sorry, Colorado State U. And that is Gonzi Chowdar. A fascinating article she published recently about the political scene in Turkey, so we'll bring you up to speed on that. And then we'll talk Iraq with Raed Jarar, an actual Iraqi, who we know from Global Exchange. He's also affiliated now with the American Friends. And in our 5 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about veterans issues. First up, Larry Scott from VAWatchdog.org. And then we rejoin Mike Ergo. He's a veteran of the Iraqi War, a 23-year-old former Marine who was gung-ho for the war when he was shipped over there and had a real change of heart. He told us about it last week, but we didn't get to finish the story, so we'll complete that interview with Mike Ergo later today here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're invited to participate because this is a live call-in show, and all you got to do is pick up that fancy cell phone or whatever else device you use and call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, or You can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. That's how you can do it. Jameson Foser is a senior fellow at Media Matters for America. They're on the web at mediamatters.org. Jamo, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you, Peter?
Not too bad. And, you know, one of the reasons I often feel good on Mondays is that, by choice, I don't watch the Sunday network talk shows. And Media Matters just published a powerful story. I read about it first in the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday about the white guys who populate those programs. And this is not just, by a narrow margin. And Media Matters properly picked up on this issue and referenced it during the Don Imus flap scandal, whatever we want to call that, a few weeks back. An actual woman of color, Gwen Ifill from the PBS NewsHour, a former NBC correspondent, was invited on with Tim Russert on Meet the Press.
Right. This study that we have posted on our website today looks at the Sunday Show guest list for 2005 and 2006. And we've previously looked at the guest list and tallied up the number of Republicans and Democrats, the number of conservatives and progressives, and found that the Sunday shows over the last several years tilt pretty strongly to the right and exclude Democrats and progressives. And what we did this time was we looked at the gender and race and ethnicity breakdown, mm-hmm. and we found that on average across the four shows, men outnumber women by a 4-to-1 ratio.
Mm-hmm.
There were nearly 7 white guests for every guest of any other race or ethnicity. So that's really just a huge disparity, and something that was pretty consistent across the four shows.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are some interesting ranges within the study, and Fox News actually comes out looking better than some of the other programs.
They do. On the race and ethnicity breakdown, that's largely because of Juan Williams, who's a regular guest. He accounted for about 99 out of their about 120 guests mm-hmm. of guests who were not white.
Mm-hmm.
So the vast majority of their guests who weren't white were Juan Williams.
Mm-hmm.
If you take him out of the equation, they're far behind. But even with Juan Williams, they just narrowly beat out the other shows. Like I said, the four were actually clumped pretty close together on,
mm-hmm.
on both measures. 77% of the guests on ABC's this week were male, 77% male, and that was actually the best performance of any of the four shows.
Wow. Now, come back to Juan Williams for a moment, because maybe I missed something, but at what point was he designated to speak for African Americans?
I don't know that he was, but on Fox, he accounts for the vast majority of all appearances by
mm-hmm.
By non-white guests.
Yeah.
Similar thing with NBC, actually. Fareed Zakaria accounts for much of their total. So, and then if you look at the guest list, and you quickly see that the vast majority of the people of color who have been on are Colin Powell and Condi Rice.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually something that the National Urban League found in a study they did a couple years ago over, I believe, most of 2004 and 2005, that not only were there very, very few African-American guests on the Sunday shows, but the raw numbers are actually, it looks bigger than it really is, because it's really just Condi Rice and Colin Powell who appear on regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an even more narrow range of opinion than it would suggest just looking at the aggregate numbers.
Yeah. So to sum up, it's the guests are right, white, and male by huge margins. And these shows are really about power, about the people who have power and influence in Washington. And does this reflect that minorities, women, and African-Americans in particular, and I don't want to give Latinos short shrift, fastest-growing population group in this country, is this simply a tacit acknowledgement that they don't have power, they don't have influence, or do you see this like one of those old country clubs that just has membership rules?
I think it's a little more of the latter, though. You know, I don't think it's a rule kind of thing as much as it's that the Sunday shows, I think, have gotten in the habit of looking to a fairly narrow range of guests. They bring the same people on over and over again, and it's a very narrow range ideologically. It's also a very narrow range in terms of the diversity that we see. It's important to note, by the way, that these shows aren't just about power. They set the terms of the debate that we have as a nation, and to exclude a large segment of society from that debate is a real disservice to the American people. Meet the Press is the highest rated of the shows, the most influential. Tim Russert is generally regarded as one of the most influential journalists in the country, if not the most. Meet the Press on Sundays is a hugely important part of our national discussion. It sets the tone for the rest of the week. 75% of the guests on Meet the Press are white men. That's an unacceptably narrow range there.
Mm-hmm.
The good news here, though, is that if the Sunday shows want to improve the diversity of their guest list, whether it's ideological diversity or gender or racial diversity, they can do so immediately. They don't need to wait for jobs to come open to hire people or anything like that. They just need to start inviting guests on who aren't conservative white males, and they can do that immediately and with very little effort. They just need to make a commitment to it.
Mm-hmm.
You saw that during the week of IMUS. There are people out there who they can invite on their shows. They know this. They have invited them on occasion in the past. They just need to have a commitment to doing so no matter what the topic is, not only during weeks when the topic is specifically about race.
So do you think it's lazy producers and bookers, or do you think that this is a conscious decision based on who the power players are and who can get Meet the Press or its competitors the highest ratings that day?
I think it's probably a combination of laziness and of familiarity. They keep going back to the same guests that they've had on in the past. That's why every other week it seems Joe Lieberman and John McCain are on. And ratings, I'm sure, and what they believe about the ratings is probably a part of it. I do think that sometimes what television producers think will get them ratings isn't necessarily consistent with what will actually get them ratings.
Mm-hmm.
As evidence of that, you just have to look at the fact that people keep hiring Glenn Beck, but the fact that nobody watches this show. And keep hiring other conservatives to host shows. You know, when you look at MSNBC, for example, Keith Olbermann gets great ratings on that network. Tucker Carlson, very poor ratings. They don't conclude from that, strangely, that maybe there's an audience out there looking for progressive or at least fewer conservatives like Tucker Carlson and Joe Scarborough.
Yeah, Tucker even gave up the bow tie, and it hasn't helped.
Right. So I'm sure they would say that they're in part doing this based on who they think will get them the ratings. I'm not sure they actually have a good judgment of that.
Now, are you aware that Glenn Beck has accused Media Matters of trying to IMUS him? Did you even know that IMUS is a verb?
I think Glenn Beck may have coined that.
What a clever guy. And do you have any response?
Now, you know, I don't really. I mean, Glenn Beck has said a lot of things on his show that I think he shouldn't have, both his radio show and CNN, and both comments that I think are inappropriate, like fantasizing on air about killing Michael Moore and asking a Muslim guest to prove to me that you're not working for the enemy. But he's also said repeatedly things that aren't necessarily offensive but are just factually false. He does that on a regular basis about global warming, for example. He's the only person I know of who has a cable show that regularly focuses on global warming, and he does it in a way that is dishonest. And
he believes there's just not enough carbon in the atmosphere.
Right. And CNN promotes that, and they embrace it. And I think they probably shouldn't. I think they should stop certainly bringing him on other programs and asking him to give his opinion on global warming without countering him, which is something they do. I think it's unfortunate that ABC hired him as a guest analyst. He's a great example, I think, of why I don't necessarily trust these networks to actually know what they're doing in terms of their ratings.
Mm-hmm.
ABC looked at Glenn Beck and looked at his CNN show, which has been getting terrible ratings, and decided, hey, this is a guy we should sign up as an analyst on our morning show.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a break and continue in just a moment with Jameson J-Mo Foser. He's from Media Matters for America. He's written a powerful column that we'll talk about next that you ought to check out at MediaMatters.org about how the media has dinged John Edwards for being a rich guy who cares about the poor, but they never ding the rich guys who care about the rich. That's coming up next, and if there's time, we'll talk about Bill O'Reilly and his name-calling problem as we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years. and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. It's 23 minutes after the hour, and we're talking with Jameson Jamo Foser from Media Matters for America. You got to go to their website, MediaMatters.org, and in a moment we'll talk about his recent column about the treatment of John Edwards, the presidential candidate, in the press. But one of my favorite callers is on the line. It's Alice from Humboldt. And Alice, have you completed your work on that case of wine that you won last summer?
Well, almost. I just wanted to save it. Save one last bottle for something special.
Okay. Well, good. How are you today?
Well, fair. Just fair.
Okay, well.
Yeah. How about you?
I'm doing better. I'm getting my voice back.
Well,
so
good.
Do you watch the Sunday morning talk shows a lot?
Yes, I try to.
Uh-huh. You have favorites or ones you hate?
Well, I let me read what I got here.
All right.
I, too, have pretty much given up on the Sunday morning talk show. For a few years now, I have wondered, is this the week that they will deal with the real truth? But each week, they don't. Nothing about election fraud or impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about that.
No, it's very safe topics that they talk about. And while Tim Russert often asks a tough question with that video clip that embarrasses his subject, I mean, he's done that to Dick Cheney fairly effectively, he is pretty weak on the follow-up. And he lets them get away with a lot of evasions and just spin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Alice, thanks for your comment. I really appreciate that.
Well, it's good to hear from you.
Well, it's good to hear from you. And you keep picking, will you?
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
So, J-Mo, you wrote a great column that was posted at Media Matters on Friday, and you analyzed recent press treatments of John Edwards, the former senator from South Carolina, who is a candidate for president again this year. And, of course, it started with the $400 haircut, but, gosh, he didn't do it in Air Force One at LAX, stopping all air traffic, and it was a private expense. I guess it got charged to the campaign, and he fixed that. But the press has been seizing on his personal wealth in an effort to undermine his very dedicated and consistent effort to change policies that affect poor and working people in this country.
Yeah, one of the recurring themes of the media coverage of John Edwards has been that he's a hypocrite for being a rich man who says he wants to help alleviate poverty and help the middle class. And that word, hypocrite, is actually used by some media to describe that. And that's just a little bit bizarre in that that's not what the word hypocrite means,
mm-hmm.
first of all. Second, there's no reason to think that it's a negative for a wealthy person to care about people other than wealthy people. And yet you have the Washington Post explicitly saying, we think his finances are significant because he's talking about trying to alleviate poverty. What you don't see the Washington Post say is something like the personal wealth of a conservative candidate who wants to cut taxes for the wealthy
mm-hmm.
is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
That would seem to be a much more relevant thing. Here we have a candidate who is proposing raising taxes on himself. John Edwards is proposing raising taxes on the wealthy, rolling back the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy to pay for universal health care. That's a very selfless thing to do,
mm-hmm.
And the media is treating it as though it's some sort of personal failing. When you have a candidate like Rudy Giuliani or John McCain or Mitt Romney, all of whom are very wealthy people who want to keep tax cuts for the wealthy and,
mm-hmm.
and pass more tax cuts for the wealthy, the media isn't examining how they would personally benefit from this.
And the source of Giuliani's wealth is all very recent. He's the guy who cashed in on 9/11.
Right. So it's this very bizarre dichotomy where they're saying that the wealth of candidates who want to pursue policies that won't help the wealthy
mm-hmm.
should be examined, but the wealth of candidates who are pursuing policies that will help the wealthy should not be examined.
And you point out that the Washington Post was inaccurate in describing that the way he sold his house or mansion in Washington was somehow a violation of the rules. And they didn't spend that much effort investigating Bill Frist's unblind trust, which was just such an obvious violation of the Senate ethics rules.
Right. You know, the other really interesting thing, I think, about some of the coverage along these lines has been that when the media covers progressive candidates who, say, want to expand access to health care in this country or to pursue universal health care, the coverage of that is very often focused on how much it would cost. And as an example of this, there's a Washington Post article earlier this year that reported, quote, Edwards unveiled a health care proposal that would cost $90 billion to $120 billion annually and be funded mainly by raising taxes on the wealthiest Americans.
Mm-hmm.
That was the entire description of it, and if you were listening closely, you'll notice that it didn't tell us a single thing about what the health care proposal would actually do.
Right.
It only told us how much it would cost.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the Republicans, and when they say they want to cut taxes, you don't see an explanation in the article of what programs and what services would have to be cut in order to do so.
J-Mo, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us. I want people to go and read your column at MediaMatters.org, especially the part about Edwards' consulting work for a hedge fund. It's very interesting. Thanks, J-Mo. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Take care.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
This is Todd the Taxi Driver, and today we're going to talk about urban legends and how you can participate in one tomorrow and help create a new one. Urban legend says that in either the 70s or the 80s, American consumers took one day and didn't buy gasoline. The legend says it worked. Gas prices dropped 30 cents a gallon by the next day. Sounds really good, but unfortunately, it never happened. But just because something didn't happen in the past, and it is an urban legend, doesn't mean it's not actually a good idea, and it can't have some positive results if people do it today. I personally believe that when any group of people get together and unite behind a common cause, it's a good thing. There are no losers. So tomorrow, don't buy gas. And who knows, maybe it will make a difference. Maybe 5 years from now, there'll be the urban legend about how Americans reacted to an urban legend and really made a difference. This is Todd the Taxi Driver saying, don't let the truth or reality get in the way of changing the world.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Okay, you want a website? What next? A lot of people can do the job, but you want innovation at a reasonable price. You want Dale Edward. Dale builds amazing websites with streaming video. Being a pro photographer ensures high-quality content. Websites, wedding, and special events photography, all at a reasonable price. Go to DaleEdward.com or call 277-9847. That's 277-9847.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Push down that weapon.
Some things aren't meant to be.
Some things don't come for free.
playing with radioactive materials and nuclear wastes. Maybe it just wasn't meant to be. What do you think? Our thanks to the Oils for our transmission and transition music at this moment. Did you know that some nuclear weapons materials wind up in landfills in this country? There's a new report published just today by the Nuclear Information and Resource Service that reports just that. And to tell us about it is one of the lead authors of the study, Diane DiRigo from the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Diane, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me, Peter.
Well, I got an email a couple of hours ago about this report, and I found it stunning. And also, it rang a little bell for me. Do you watch The Sopranos?
Actually, I don't.
Okay. It's not a crime. There's plenty of crime in the show, but it's not a crime not to watch it. Anyway, you know, it's in its final season, and they're doing a lot of different things. But one of the theme lines last night was about some gangsters who were trying to dump some asbestos. And they knew it was illegal, and so they were pressuring this other gangster to just take care of it for them. And there's this one scene where a dump truck backs up to a murky pond in a landfill and just offloads this, and the asbestos just floats away on the surface of one of those lovely waterways that we find in Secaucus, New Jersey, a few other places in the Garden State. And it just rang a bell with me because there are a lot of shenanigans that go on with the management of waste products in the United States. And it stunned me that nuclear waste can get thrown in with our garbage and all kinds of things that wind up at the landfill. Give us a quick sketch of what your study reports and how significant a problem this might be.
Well, I wanted to first comment on your situation that you describe where the asbestos is being illegally dumped.
Mm-hmm.
That's horrible enough that there's illegal dumping. What our report documents is the way that the Department of Energy, which makes the nuclear weapons in this country,
mm-hmm.
is legally or attempting to make it legal to put radioactive waste into regular garbage and possibly release it into recycling. So the difference is that was illegal, and we're talking about the federal government legally doing
mm-hmm.
this. And it's actually a question about whether it's legal, because the Department of Energy isn't exactly upfront and open in its practices. It has, because of the secrecy of the atomic age, the ability to make its own internal rules and orders and guidances. And that's what I tracked in this study, was what is it that the Department of Energy is doing to manage and release or let go of the nuclear waste that's generated as a byproduct of nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And they've got various complicated systems whereby if it's surface contaminated, well, then it can be released right straight from the Department of Energy site to a local landfill if it meets these surface contamination levels. If it's contaminated throughout the metal or throughout the material, then it has to. Then they have to project what the doses will be to the public, and if it's above some calculated dose, and they have to get permission from the Department of Energy headquarters. But the Department of Energy headquarters is usually quite agreeable to help approve and make it sound justifiable to
mm-hmm.
release the material. The same people at the Department of Energy that are in charge of cleaning up the sites and getting rid of the waste in an economical and quick manner are the ones that are making the decisions on where to send the waste. And it's a lot cheaper to send it off to regular trash than it is to attempt to isolate it for the thousands and millions of years it remains hazardous or radioactive.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a system where nuclear weapons waste, which is built up at dozens of nuclear weapons sites around the country, is being, in supposedly small amounts, let out. We know that these sites are leaking into the air and into the water. Now we find out that there's actually a system in place to let contaminated materials go out as well.
Mm-hmm.
And by shining a light on this, I think that we're going to be able to stop it.
Now, try to put this in context because, we now have disposable diapers that will take a couple of hundred years to biodegrade, and that could be amusing at a certain point. But the half-life of these radioactive wastes is...
Right.
Hundreds of thousands of years or tens of thousands of years?
Well, we'll give you a few examples. Plutonium-239 has a half-life of 24,000 years.
Yeah.
So it's hazardous radioactively for 240,000 to 480,000 years. The general rule is 10 or 20 half-lives is the length of hazard of the waste.
Mm-hmm.
So iodine-129, which is a byproduct of nuclear power and weapons, has a half-life of 17 million years. So we're looking at 170 to 340 million years hazardous. And this is in so-called low-level radioactive waste. We've got cesium and strontium, which are hazardous more in the range of 300 to 600 years. And those are elements that all of these elements concentrate in different parts of the body, cause cancer, cause birth defects, cause reduced immunity. There's no question that all ionizing radioactivity is harmful and that there's no safe dose.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, how do we get our government to have a goal of isolating and preventing the release rather than trying to minimize, lecture us about how a little bit is okay, and then spread it out to unregulated destinations?
Mm-hmm. Do you know what the status is of the nuclear waste that was put into barrels hardened with cement and dropped off the coast of San Francisco out near the Farallon Islands in the 1950s?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
I actually don't, but I can suspect that it is not being isolated from the environment. Salt water eats away at containers. It's my understanding some of those containers were not, that they broke open upon disposal.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely have failed nuclear waste dumps all around in the waters, in legally nuclear licensed landfills are also causing problems. There was a decade-long fight against a new nuclear dump in California, down in the Ward Valley area,
right,
which was successful in preventing that dump, which
had
leaked into the L.A. drinking water supply.
And using the leaf blower approach, we have now pushed that over to Yucca Mountain in Nevada, which is, of course, much, much safer.
Well, actually, those are simultaneous dumps. Yucca Mountain's for the irradiated fuel, the high-level waste,
mm-hmm.
and the Ward Valley was targeted for what's called in the U.S. low-level radioactive waste. Of course, the plutonium that I described, the iodines, the cesium and strontiums, they're all in both high- and low-level waste. It's just that in the fuel rods, the high-level waste, they're much more concentrated to the point where they could give a lethal dose unshielded in a very short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
In the so-called low-level waste, it would take 20 minutes or so in some of that waste to give a lethal dose. And then we've got the waste that we're more looking at in this study, which is larger volumes where the radioactivity has been spread over large volumes, so we don't have lethal dose amounts, but we have immediate lethal dose amounts.
Mm-hmm.
But we have radioactivity contaminating soils or buildings as they're being dismantled, chemicals that were used for filtration or all kinds of... when you clean your house, you've got a lot of... you've got garbage that you're cleaning out. When you clean up a nuclear weapons complex, you've got a lot of garbage. The problem is it's potentially contaminated with long-lasting carcinogens that need to be isolated. And so those materials need to be put into a system that at least has a goal of preventing leakage rather than intentionally segmenting it out and letting out a little bit here and a little bit there, some to landfills, some to recyclers, some in this load, some in that load. We have a success story in that in the year 2000, the Secretary of Energy, at the pressuring from the nuclear, from the metal industry and the public, put a ban on letting potentially radioactive metal be recycled into commerce. And that was because the metal industry did not want to poison its recycling. It's one of the most successful recycling industries in the world. It is. The most volume of recycling that's done is in metals. And these guys did not want radioactive contamination. They had a zero tolerance policy for accepting it. They put detectors up at their gates. and they're doing their best to keep it out. So the Department of Energy, which makes the weapons, said we're not going to recycle radioactive metal commercially. However, they are now looking at supposedly restricted recycling of metal.
Mm-hmm.
They want to build a facility that's supposedly going to melt it and separate it and clean it up some and then use it only for uses within a nuclear complex, which theoretically sounds great. But if there's not a large enough market to make it economically worthwhile, or if it's not properly labeled and tracked as a radioactive material after its first use, then it could be released, and
mm-hmm.
there could be exemptions made to release what's supposed to be restricted. And we're talking about investing in an industry to process metal. So we have a concern that maybe this is a danger that will circumvent the one victory that we have had.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Diane DiRigo. She is with the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. I want to direct you to their website. It's simple, NIRS.org. That is NIRS.org. And the link to the report that we're discussing is right there on the home page, so take a look at it for yourself. The headline reads, new report finds nuclear weapons materials released to landfills, pathways open for reuse and recycling. Now, Diane, let's take a moment to talk about an area I'm familiar with, which is the Los Alamos nuclear weapons facility
uh-huh.
in New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And this, of course, is it's a big piece of property, but I can remember going to, there's an Indian pueblo about 20 miles east of Los Alamos. And I was there on a very hot day hiking through it, and there's a stream that flows through. And I thought, oh, you know, I'll wash my face and cool off a little bit. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. I'm right downstream from Los Alamos, and I don't have a Geiger counter. I have no idea if that water is safe. And I am one of those people who has serious doubts. Based on what we know about Savannah River in Georgia, about the Hanford nuclear facility in Washington State, about Rocky Flats in Colorado, and I don't have any higher trust in Los Alamos or its companion, the Livermore Labs here in California, in terms of their management of waste. Are my suspicions well-founded, or can you relieve me of them?
No, I would tell you that they're very well-founded, concerned about upcoming plans for incineration at your facility up in
Livermore.
Mm-hmm. But jumping back to the Los Alamos site, which is one of the studies, one of the sites that we looked at in this study, Los Alamos, which is actually one of the most breathtaking places, scenic in the world. It's such a crime that it's been so contaminated.
Indeed.
But they are, one of the things that's going on there is not only release of radioactive materials that can go to landfills, but they and a few other sites have auctions where they sell pretty regularly excess property from
mm-hmm.
the weapons site.
Mm-hmm.
And no one can hope that maybe it didn't get contaminated, but there's it's actually legal if it's contaminated to the government-chosen contamination levels.
Uh-huh.
And then there's also a lot of property there that's being taken from the government weapons complex at Los Alamos and given or sold to the Native American tribe, to the community of Los Alamos, to private developers. There are excess properties, this is land and buildings,
mm-hmm.
that are being released or cleared. And this is happening there. That's one of the sites at Los Alamos where that's happening.
Yeah. I need to take a break, Diane, so stand by. We'll continue in just a moment. Diane DiRigo is our guest from the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Again, their website, NIRS.org. Got a question? Call me now, toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
A radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540 KRXA, 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays.
Wow. Why are realtors from Los Angeles spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to defeat Measure A here in Monterey County?
It sure isn't because they want to save our farmland.
The developers and supervisors oppose Measure A because it puts an end to their cozy development deals.
Cozy development deals like the massive Rancho San Juan development that was approved by the Board of Supervisors but rejected by 76% of voters.
It's true. 76% of the voters opposed Rancho San Juan because it was wrong for Monterey County. But the developers pushed it through anyway.
That's why we need to pass ballot Measure A to protect our quality of life.
Measure A is a common-sense, community-minded plan to control growth that was written by the people of Monterey County.
It lets the people decide how fast we should grow.
So join the League of Women Voters and the California Nurses Association, who all support Measure A, because it lets the community have a voice about our future.
And that's why the Community General Plan Committee paid for this message. Vote yes on Measure A.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
I'm Scott Dick, the host of the Tasty Planet Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I interview great guests, including national, regional, and local personalities that make our planet so delicious. And I want your feedback. It's simple. Go to www.tastyplanet.org, complete the survey, fill out a form, and you'll be automatically entered to win. That's all there is to it, and your info is safe with me. I won't use it for anything but this contest. So listen in on Saturdays from 1 to 4 p.m., and as Julia Child used to say, bon appetit!
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 9 minutes away from the hour. Thanks for joining us today. Our music of the moment is from an early U2 CD called Out of Control. That's the song. And that's the title of the report we're discussing from the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. It's called Out of Control on Purpose. The Department of Energy's dispersal of radioactive waste into landfills and consumer products. This is a stunning discovery or a report, and I urge you to read it online at NIRS.org. We continue with Diane DiRigo from the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, and Jake joins us from Arcata. Hello, Jake. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter B. I'd just like to bring up the issue of depleted uranium ammunition. It is a byproduct of the nuclear weapons industry, and
right.
The American military has been using this in Iraq and has littered the country there with radiation. You know, we've killed hundreds of thousands of people with Bush's illegal war, but we don't know how many more people will die as a result of cancer
right.
from our ammunition.
And this will last much longer than the occupation, however long that happens to be. Diane, would you like to address that?
Yeah, I would. One of the companies that one of the ways that the Department of Energy lets its nuclear waste out is through processors. There are companies that are licensed to process the waste. If it's too hot for DOE to just let it straight out, according to its own rules, it can send it to a facility that has a license. And Tennessee has a lot of those. And what I found in the course of this study is that there is a company called Aerojet in Tennessee that it actually does processing of this depleted uranium. So not only do we have it, being dumped on other countries, we're actually polluting the United States in order to make that depleted uranium in the first place, in order to make it into a form that can be used in that way. There's an enormous amount of this depleted uranium left over from the processing of nuclear materials for nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that the state of Tennessee is confronted with, as the Department of Energy there has a huge complex at Oak Ridge.
Right.
What to do with all of this waste? And we've got a few other enrichment centers for uranium that have just waste that's being unethically used to as a weapon and mm-hmm. also as consumer goods.
Yeah.
And this is another piece of this, is that depleted uranium is one horrible kind of waste from the production of nuclear power and weapons. We've got all kinds of waste, and the policy appears to be market them, sell them, and then they're no longer a waste. They're just a resource that someone else has to deal with the outfall from.
Yeah, and it's just shameful that we have used what is a weapon of mass destruction that has this lifetime of tens of thousands of years that will plague the people of Iraq, and we did it. They told us to disarm a guy who we thought had weapons of mass destruction, but by golly, he'd gotten rid of them. Jake, thanks for bringing that up today.
Thank you, Peter.
I appreciate it. Ellen in Humboldt. Go ahead, Ellen. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I was just calling in to kind of relate my experience from living in Alamogordo, New Mexico from 50 to 54.
Oh, really?
Very small child.
Uh-huh.
And my dad worked at the base at Land Air at White Sands. But White Sands was open during, well, practically year-round for families to go picnic and ride down the big sand dunes. And nobody was really cautioned to stay out of any particular area. And interestingly enough, the medical problems that my mother, father, and myself had in later years, which were things that really shouldn't, for example, we developed cataracts in our 30s.
Mm.
My mother went through hysterectomy in her late 30s, myself in my early 20s.
Oh, my.
But then on the other hand, my brother, who is 10 years younger than me, was not around any of this because we had left the area. And well, obviously he wouldn't have a hysterectomy.
Yes.
But he didn't have any cataracts or any health problems.
Mm-hmm.
We're very fortunate in that both parents have lived a very long, pretty cancer-free life. But I remember back to where my parents would talk about, are we sending a Christmas card to whomever this year? No, they're dead now, in terms of the ranchers in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody really talked to the ranchers, just after all the testing went on, and the water was bad. Cows were dying.
Well, and like the downwinders from the nuclear test sites in Nevada and elsewhere, the government has provided no follow-up for your cataracts or your hysterectomy.
Mm-hmm.
You're on your own.
Right.
And Diane, have they even done ongoing studies of the epidemiology of exposure in those areas?
Well, I don't know the details of that particular site, but we do know that uranium mining, which is also done in the Southwest largely, and the Native American people that have been doing that they've clearly got health effects that have not been compensated, and as we are threatened with a new round, a new age of nuclear weapons and nuclear power, we're looking at uranium mining starting up all over again in areas where the people have never been compensated in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, we've not learned from our lessons of the past at all,
mm-hmm.
and we need to.
Ellen, thank you for sharing your story. I really appreciate it. It's good to have you listening. And, Diane, just about 30 seconds remaining. You looked at Oak Ridge in Tennessee, Rocky Flats in Colorado, Los Alamos, two sites in Ohio, including the Fernald incinerator site, West Valley, New York, and Paducah, Kentucky. Which were the worst in terms of nuclear waste winding up in landfills?
I can't say that any are worse than the others because we weren't able to track everything. The promises of record keeping and public notification, which came in the year 2000 from the DOE, were not fulfilled. The commitment to reporting was not fulfilled. In fact, we're filing another Freedom of Information request with the Department of Energy to once again try to ascertain exactly what's gotten out where, particularly with regard to recycling into consumer goods.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got to stop there. Diane, I really appreciate your work, and I like that you know how to pronounce nuclear. We'll talk again.
Have a great night. Bye.
Diane DiRigo, and visit the website NIRS.org. Coming up next, we'll talk Turkey and Iraq on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Tomorrow Matters, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, will be moving from Sundays to a daily spot Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll still be bringing in the guests, and you'll still be calling in with your questions and ideas, and we'll still be working collectively to set the standards for a more sustainable future. But we'll be doing it 5 times a week. Starting May 14th, join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. New owner jitters at Chrysler.
Hopefully it'll be a good combination. I'm not so sure. I guess time will tell.
President Bush moves on auto emissions.
I have directed members of my administration to complete the process by the end of 2008.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Like selling a beat-up used car, Germany's Daimler-Benz is unloading Chrysler for a fraction of what it paid when the company was still shiny. CBS News business correspondent Anthony Mason begins our coverage.
At the altar 9 years ago, Daimler and Chrysler promised it was a marriage made in heaven.
How would you describe the Daimler-Chrysler merger?
A fiasco.
Former Chrysler chairman Lee Iacocca.
No cars are perfect, but these come pretty close.
Who rescued the company from bankruptcy in the 1980s, says they never made the synergies work.
Mergers alone don't guarantee bigness, doesn't guarantee better, you know. They didn't have a plan to do that. That's why it failed. And now they're throwing it off, really.
Daimler paid $36 billion to buy Chrysler. They're selling it for a fifth of that.
Cerberus Capital Management will pay $7.4 billion, but also assume Chrysler's health care liabilities, estimated at $18 billion. Those kinds of costs are weighing down all U.S. automakers, as CBS News correspondent Nancy Cordes explains.
For every car that rolls off their U.S. assembly lines, GM, Ford, and Daimler Chrysler shell out an average of $1,360 for something called legacy costs. That's $800 for retiree health care, $360 for retiree pension plans, and $200 for workers whose jobs have been eliminated. Compare that to Toyota. The burden for its U.S. retirees is less than $100 per car.
Cerberus is expected to push the unions for major concessions, but United Auto Workers President Ron Gettelfinger is not objecting to the deal.
Based on everything that we heard, we were comfortable enough to say that we would support this transaction.
Chrysler workers, like this man, don't know what to think.
I think it's just a waiting game right now to find out what's going to happen. Who knows?
Now this.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by 4 trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
Hi, Dave. Larry here. Hey, next Tuesday, one wheel from every pallet truck is going to fall off. Strangest thing. It'll basically grind the floor to a halt. How about that? Just wanted you to be prepared. Bye.
In your job, you don't get warnings, so Granger's just added a massive amount of material handling products to help get you through whatever the day brings. We're adding products and removing problems. From casters and wheels to carts, trucks, and conveyors, we have what you need to move, handle, and store just about anything. Call or visit your local branch or go online to Granger.com. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
The Supreme Court last month blasted the Bush administration for inaction on global warming. Today, President Bush responded with an executive order.
A
I'm directing the EPA and the Department of Transportation, Energy, and Agriculture to take the first steps toward regulations that would cut gasoline consumption and greenhouse gas emissions from motor vehicles, using my 20 and 10 plan as a starting point.
He aims to reduce gasoline consumption by 20% over 10 years. Rising prices might help accomplish that goal. Today, the government put the national average at a record $3.10 a gallon. The top deputy to embattle Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is resigning. We get more from CBS News reporter Stephanie Lambidakis.
Paul McNulty is the highest-level casualty over the U.S. attorney firings. He has been under intense pressure for giving inaccurate testimony to Congress, testimony that conflicted with the attorney general's. And there are new problems ahead. Gonzalez's former counsel, Monica Goodling, has accused McNulty of trying to blame her for the misleading testimony, and Goodling will soon testify before Congress under a grant of immunity.
The U.S. military in Iraq believes three soldiers missing since an ambush Saturday are held by militants linked to Al-Qaeda.
We are doing everything we can to find these brave and courageous soldiers.
Major General William Caldwell says they're getting tips from Iraqis. The group claiming to hold the soldiers warns the U.S. military, if you want their safety, do not look for them. Today, officials confirm the killings of four more American troops in separate attacks. A government survey finds that more than a quarter of all young adults don't use traditional wired telephones. They rely strictly on their cell phones for all the calls they make and receive. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
From the crack of dawn to late at night, cops are on the lookout for seatbelt violations. It doesn't matter when or where you drive, wear a seatbelt or you will get a ticket. Cops are cracking down like never before, so remember, always buckle up or you will get caught, day and night. Click it or ticket. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Transportation.
The wind isn't helping.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated.
Really?
And mild-mannered.
Who wrote that?
When he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Later this hour, an Iraqi talks about Iraq. Ra'ed Jarrar returns to our program. There's a lot to talk about. But first, we want to take a look at the protests underway in the nation of Turkey. About 7 years ago, I had a chance to visit Turkey as a tourist. Very impressive. I'll never forget it.
Ready, steady, go!
And I have up on my screen right now a photograph of the port city of Izmir. It's down the coast from Istanbul. And I visited there in the off-season. There was almost nobody there. And the photograph I'm looking at shows hundreds of thousands of Turkish citizens, most waving red banners, in a very colorful protest display right along the beautiful azure Mediterranean. And I was just mentioning to our producer, Katrina Rill, why don't we have scenes like this in the United States? There's plenty to protest about. For commentary and some background, we turn to Gamze Chowdar. She is an assistant professor of political science at Colorado State University, an expert on Islamic movements, and you can read her powerful essay at the Middle East Report's website, merip.org. It's called Behind Turkey's Presidential Battle. Professor, thanks for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
And let me just ask you a personal question. What's for dinner at your house tonight?
We haven't prepared our dinner yet.
Okay. I just was salivating a
turkey.
Little bit.
Yeah, I think you were expecting the answer to be turkey.
No, I was thinking it might be a lamb dish of, you know, with some special spices.
Uh-huh, some sort of kebab.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I'll give you some ideas to work on for after the interview.
Okay.
Well, thank you for joining us, and I really do want to recommend the article that you've written to our listeners who have read some of the American news accounts of the recent activities and the political reaction in Turkey, because you offer some great background to help people understand what has produced the massive protests that I referred to. Some tens of thousands of people came in by ferry boat to the port of Izmir, and others, descended by land. And this is a very impressive showing. 1.5 million protesters in a relatively small area. Izmir is a bay city, and it's just stunning to see this kind of popular expression. So we turn to you to explain the red banners and the history of Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, who founded the Republic, the Secular Republic of Turkey, back in 1923.
Sure. Turkey has a parliamentary system. Let me start with that. Mm-hmm. Turkey has a parliamentary system according to which the president is elected by two-thirds majority of the Grand National Assembly. This lies at the center of the conflict, because in the 2002 elections, a newly established party, Justice and Development Party, seized the majority of the seats in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
The party received...
And let me just jump in that the acronym for that is AKP, so people can understand the shorthand. Go right ahead.
Correct. The party received about 34% of the votes, but it was able to control about 65% of the seats in the parliament. Well, how was this possible? This was possible thanks to the electoral system, which has a 10% threshold. It means that a political party has to receive at least 10% of the votes at the national level to be able to have representation in the parliament.
Really? So if you don't clear that hurdle, you get zip?
Yes.
Hmm.
Exactly.
And do the other votes get reassigned to the other parties?
Well, this is exactly what happened. This unfair electoral system prevented about 47% of the votes cast in 2002 from getting representation in the legislature. So only two parties were able to pass the threshold. One of them was this governing party, Justice and Development Party, or the AKP, a party which has roots in Islamism. And the other one was a secular party, Republican People's Party, which has now the largest opposition seats in the parliament. The Justice and Development Party formed a majority government in 2002 and has been in power since then.
Okay, and the prime minister is Tayyip Erdogan.
Correct.
And he's the chairman of that party as well, and that probably cements his power.
Correct. The current political battle over the presidential elections is taking place because of the secular concerns that the governing party has Islamist roots. Many seculars believe that if the party elects the next president, there will be no check on its power, and the secular system will be undermined.
And their candidate is Abdullah Gül, G-U-L. And he is he's Islamic, and he does not hide that.
Well, you know, is what I mean by Islamist is an ideology, political ideology, that would like to establish an Islamist state, and would like to structure the society according to the Islamist rules. What the party wants, actually.
Professor, before we go a little further, I think it's important to identify the role of the military in this country, because you did describe the textbook architecture of the government, but we recently saw that the military sent a very strong signal, and we know that four times since the Republic was founded, the military has removed a leader that they felt was insufficiently secular. And so they made a not-so-veiled threat to Erdogan that if he proceeded to try to promote Abdullah Gül to the presidency, that they might take action.
correct, they might. In fact, they did. I mean, on April 27th, they posted a memorandum on the webpage of the Turkish Armed Forces. This was a new type of intervention, you know. It was not a full-fledged military coup, but it was a type of, you know, e-coup,
right.
as they call it in Turkey.
No tanks rolled, but the message was delivered very clearly.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It was good. Everybody got the message. Secularism is fundamental to Turkey's identity as a nation. Turkey was founded in 1923 by Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, and Turkey's ruling elite, which is the secular establishment and the powerful military, have seen the secularism, has considered themselves as a protector of what Atatürk set up, especially the military. As you said, the military hasn't been afraid to intervene militarily whenever it deemed necessary in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And this latest message was very powerful, and unfortunately it undermined Turkish democracy because, well, political parties may disagree with each other. Candidates can, you know, can be filled and withdrawn, and rallies can take place. All these are healthy signs of democracy, but when the military intervenes, it means it is the end of politics, because when guns are involved, we can no longer talk about politics. It is only threat, manipulation, and even coercion. And unfortunately, this is what's going on in Turkey.
Yeah. Now, we're talking, by the way, with Professor Gamze Çauder from Colorado State University. We're talking about the situation, the political developments in Turkey. I direct you to the website of the Middle East Report at merip.org, where you can read this exceptional article that I think really can help you understand the situation. Now, Professor, tell us about what you call the soft Islamist or neo-Islamist leanings of the AKP, the party that we've been describing here.
Uh-huh. The Justice and Development Party was founded by a group of politicians who were quite active in the Islamist movements in Turkey during the 1980s and the 1990s. These politicians participated in the two previous Islamist parties, namely the Welfare Party and the Virtue Party. Both of these parties were closed down in the 1990s by the Constitutional Court on the grounds that they operated against the basic principles of the Republic, particularly secularism.
Mm-hmm.
The leaders of the Justice and Development Party now claim that the party, this new party, radically differs from the previous Islamist parties because it respected the secular principles of the Constitution, and it was not going to propose any radical change in domestic politics or Turkey's foreign policy orientation. So since it came to power in 2002, the party has been, the government has been very much careful, you know, with its relations with the secular establishment. It tried not to antagonize the secular establishment.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, I think, very different. This time it is taking a very radical and confrontational attitude and stand. This is different.
Okay. And so you point out in your article that Erdogan has moved up the elections that were planned for November, and they're scheduled for mid-July now. And has Gül pulled out of contention for the presidency?
Well, officially, Abdullah Gül withdrew its candidacy. But it doesn't mean that he can be, you know, he can be a... It doesn't mean that he cannot be a candidate again.
So he can be drafted, eh?
Sure, sure. So the as you know, as you indicated, Abdullah Gül is the prime minister, and the government, you know, called for early elections and at the same time amended the constitution in a way to elect the next president by popular vote. Of course, this has to be, you know, ratified and signed by the president. Outgoing president, Cesar.
Cesar. That's S-E-Z-E-R.
Uh-huh. Correct.
Go ahead.
Correct. So he can veto this new bill, you know, to elect the president by popular vote. In that case, the government can, you know, resend the bill to the president again, and in that case, the president has no choice but to sign it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have to take a break. We'll continue in just a moment and talk more about the developments in Turkey and the reasons for the protests. 1.5 million people gathered to promote secularism and protest Islamism in Turkey over this past weekend. We're talking with Professor Gamze Chowdar from Colorado State University. Your calls and comments are welcome, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
All right, let's take a look at traffic. Got to let you know that we do have really not a lot of activity at this point. I want to mention that we did have a little bit of slow traffic southbound 1 between Monterey and Carmel. By the way, eastbound 25 does, right now at this point, it slows a little bit in certain pockets from Gilroy to Hollister. No problems on Highway 17 either direction, and really no other major stalls or crashes to talk about. We did get word of an earlier problem that was northbound 1 by Capitola.
We continue. continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 23 minutes after the hour. We're talking about political protests. 1.5 million people jammed the port city of Izmir. And that's not far from the historic Roman city of Ephesus that you may know from your history books. I visited there a few years ago. It was so fascinating and impressive to see what the Romans had done. We're talking with a political science professor from Colorado State University, Gamzee Chowdar, and her article is, as we mentioned, available to you online at the Middle East Report, MERIP.org, and it gives you some great history and context to these recent developments there in Turkey. Dave has a question and joins us from Humboldt. Hello, Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter, and Professor Chowdar. I hope it's fair to ask, how do the people of Turkey look upon what's going on in their neighboring Iraq and Afghanistan?
And this will be difficult, but try to keep your answer under 35 minutes.
Well, as you would imagine, American invasion of Iraq wasn't popular in Turkey. A significant number of people was against the invasion. In fact, it was over 80%. And the Turkish parliament rejected the American Bush administration's request.
And the bribe that was attached to it.
Well, correct. The request to deploy American troops in Turkey, inside Turkey's borders. Which obviously very much alienated the Bush administration. But let's face it, the American invasion of Iraq created this huge, huge mess in the region. And it causes great instability for all the neighboring countries, and Turkey is one of them. And whether or not the United States stays there.
Mm-hmm. And Professor, forgive me, our time is tight, but one of the critical issues is the Kurds, the tensions between Ankara and the military and the Kurds indigenous to Turkey, as well as those who live over the border in Iraq, are a serious source of tension in the region and between the U.S. and Turkey.
Correct. The stakes are higher for Turkey because of the Kurdish issue, as you indicated, because Turkey has 10 to 15 millions of Kurdish population living inside Turkey, and the possibility of an independent Kurdish state in northern Iraq really causes great concern for Turkey because of, you know, some possible demands from Turkey's, you know, territory.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry to cut that short because there's a lot more to talk about, but I want to return to a key part of your article that would help people understand the tensions in Turkey today. And it has to do with the public wearing of headscarves by women. A case came up in university, and it was ruled improper under Turkish law. And then there was an incident at the Council of State, the highest administrative court, like our Supreme Court, where a man invaded, killed a judge, wounded four others, and reportedly shouted, "I am a soldier of Allah," before he opened fire there in the court. Here in the West, we have a hard time understanding how headscarves could be such a sensitive issue.
Well, as I said, secularism is fundamental to Turkey's identity as a nation, and that secularism is defined in a peculiar way. It is very different from the US understanding of secularism. Headscarf is not allowed in universities in Turkey, public and private alike. And government-owned institutions also do not allow headscarf-wearing women. The same is true for all other religious symbols, in fact. And the Justice and Development Party was careful in not nominating any headscarf-wearing woman to the legislature in 2002, and I'm sure it's going to do the same now. But those who wear a headscarf usually do voluntary work at the grassroots level within the party. However, the party's careful avoidance from a headscarf controversy was bound to fail because both Tayyip Erdoğan's and Abdullah Gül's wives wear headscarf. So if Gül elected next president, the first lady, as a result, will be a headscarf-wearing woman. The headscarf is a highly politicized issue in Turkey, and seculars consider it a symbol of Islamism that would undermine the secular principles of the constitution. That's why the reason why women dominated these demonstrations and rallies, particularly in Istanbul. They constituted the majority of the demonstrators in Istanbul, for instance. The organizers also were all women. Women have been the leading beneficiaries of Turkish secularism, and that's why they are afraid that if the ruling party, Justice and Development Party, consolidates its power, you know, their rights would be reversed.
Professor, I want to thank you for joining us and encourage people to read your article. It's very informative, and I hope we can talk again.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me.
Gamzee Chowdhury. Go to MERIP.org to read it.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience, who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Day six since a majority of the Iraqi parliament petitioned for a timetable. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. It was last Tuesday that a majority of the Iraqi parliament signed a petition calling for the United States to set a timetable for withdrawal. It wasn't one of those crazy be out by sundown and don't let the door slam timetables, but a timetable linked to the ability of Iraqi troops to take over. There's apparently a concern on the Iraqi side that without some kind of deadline, we will never leave. They don't want a security vacuum, but they also don't want us to stay forever. And they apparently feel that the only way to make sure that doesn't happen is to set out some dates. The question then becomes, if they do set those dates, would we honor them? Senator Mitch McConnell, who leads the Republican minority, said Sunday that if the Iraqi parliament asks us to leave, we'll be glad to comply. But Senator and presidential candidate John McCain, speaking on Meet the Press, seemed less willing to comply with the deadline, even if it's imposed by the parliament we help set up.
There is a certain amount of domestic political calculations involved there in what the Iraqi, quote, parliament said.
Did he say the Iraqi, quote, parliament? I believe he did. Are we fighting to protect a make-believe parliament? That can't be. So why would anyone want to ignore their timetable?
I believe that the consequences of failure, particularly sitting on the large reserves of oil they have...
Stop right there. Say no more. We get it.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging.
And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam, firewalls, and web filters.
Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now and ask for your free trial.
Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use.
That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Carmel Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Carmel Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Carmel Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Carmel Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Carmel Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Carmel Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Live.
live from San Francisco, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Lively, informative, compelling, progressive talk radio. And it's interactive, too, which is a fancy way of saying he takes your phone calls. Toll free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. Fasten your seatbelt and let's take a ride in Peter B.'s America.
Those who start wars never fight them. And those who fight wars, they never like them. And those who write laws, they can recite them. Just fight laws, we live and die them. But I know they're never gonna tell you why. No, they only wanna tell you lies. No, never ever gonna tell you why. No, they only wanna tell you lies. No, never ever gonna tell you why. No, they only wanna tell you lies. It's time, it's time to go home.
Over the weekend, Max Cleland spoke out. He was a senator from Georgia until he got swift voted by Karl Rove and pals. And he's been largely absent from the debate over Iraq because they gave him a cushy job at the Export-Import Bank and he needs the money. But he broke his silence and referred to Iraq as the 51st state. The occupied 51st state of the United States of America. And while that may be offensive to some, I think it expresses the ugly reality of the Bush administration's view of the occupation and the oil resources of Iraq in particular. And in the corporate media in this country, we rarely hear from the voices of actual Iraqis. Ra'ed Jarrar returns to our program today, born in Baghdad and lived there most of his life, trained as an architect, and came to the United States in 2005. We've spoken with him before, and I find him very well informed, and, he has that perspective that, as I said, is often missing from coverage in this country. Ra'ed, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, it's my pleasure, and we talked to your writing partner, Joshua, on Friday. About the piece that was up recently at Alternet. Wanted to thank you for that. Let me start off, it might surprise you a bit, but we were, just before you joined us, Ra'ed, talking with a professor from Colorado State about the protests over the weekend in Turkey. And I wanted to get your perspective as an Iraqi on the Kurdish population in Iraq, their relatives and, ethnic colleagues on the other side of the border in Turkey. And what you see developing with the moves toward Kurdish independence and how the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq has fueled that, which offers some possible liberation for Kurds and great concern on the part of the leaders in Turkey.
In fact, it raises a lot of concerns on the part of leaders of Turkey and Syria and Iran, because it seems like the Iraqi case, where Kurdistan ended up being a completely independent, unannounced state. It's an independent state that was not announced in the north of Iraq. And the Iraqi Kurds plans to include other Kurds to a bigger and form a bigger state. It looks like it's threatening the national unity of neighboring countries. And it's one of the major issues that Iraq's neighbors are concerned about now, in addition to the other issues that relate to exporting the Iraqi violence to their country.
Mm-hmm. And so from your perspective, does a successful central government in Baghdad have to limit the role of the Kurds in that central government and try to curb their desire to form an independent state?
Well, the Kurds in Iraq, the two Kurdish main parties, I have already created an independent state. There is Kurdistan in the north of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely separated from Iraq. They have their own government, their own army, their own borders, and their their own embassies around the world. If you wanted to go to Erbil now, you can't get an embassy from the Iraqi embassy. A visa from the Iraqi embassy. You have to get a visa from the, the Kurdish embassy. Mm-hmm. So this case of, separation in Iraq is, not very comfortable to the rest of Iraqis, because it seems like the only interest for the Kurdish leaders to be in the Baghdad government is to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a sincere, relationship that wants to build, a sustainable relationship. It's just to destroy any centralized issues, like, let's say, oil revenue issue, or like the new Iraqi oil law, or the regions law. All of these issues are for destroying Iraq's central government.
Mm-hmm.
While at the same time, Iraqis are not against having the Kurds, giving the Kurds self-autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
The north, which is the right that was granted to them even under the former Iraqi constitution, where they had the only case in the Middle East where they had self-autonomy and Kurdish was an official second language.
Mm-hmm. Now Saddam certainly had his episodes of gassing the Kurds and restricting their political involvement and their societal mobility. But what was it like, citizen to citizen, when you were living in Iraq? Did Kurds have social mobility? Could they go to the universities and educate themselves and rise to the level of Sunnis and Shia?
Yes, of course. Even in all of my life in Iraq, we had always Kurdish friends who lived in Baghdad. And in fact, even Arabs had to study Kurdish language, like my mother and even myself, we studied Kurdish in the school.
Really?
Because it was a second language that it was optional for Arabs, but you can study it. Both of us chose to study it. But we shouldn't forget that the former Iraqi government was a very strong oppressive regime. But it was more political oriented. So you can see that one of the vice presidents was a Kurd, but maybe he was, one of the most, violent person against Kurds and other Iraqis. But it doesn't mean that Kurds were discriminated against. They had rights. They went to schools. They had free education and free healthcare, the same way that all of the other Iraqis did.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. We're talking with Ra'ed Jarar here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And Ra'ed, I want to turn next to our president, the guy we're stuck with here, George W. Bush, because since the Iraq Study Group, his father's friends, came out with the report last fall, he has steadfastly refused to move on two issues, benchmarks, and any kind of engagement with Iran and Syria, the key neighbors who others advise him to engage with. And he's done some backflips in the past week after vetoing the supplemental appropriations bill, where timelines had been stripped out but benchmarks had remained. He surprised people in a Pentagon news conference and said he now thinks that benchmarks are a good idea. And we learned that Ryan Crocker, the new ambassador to Baghdad, has been authorized to conduct some fairly high-level conversations with his Iranian counterparts. How do you read that? Is Bush acceding to reality, or do you think these are, just PR steps that don't have any real meaning?
No, I think they are just another example of how the Bush administration functions in a very non-strategic way, because on the one hand, the benchmarks are not a new idea at all. In fact, the president was telling us about the same benchmarks for the last 4 years and the same excuses for keeping the U.S. troops in Iraq for the last 4 years. So I don't really think it's a new idea. He's always said that we will you know, stand down when the Iraqis stand up or whatever other rhetoric. The major point is that the president has continuously refused to link these benchmarks to a timetable, and this is the major issue here. Because without having benchmarks tied to a timetable, we will continue going in the same path of destruction and death with no limitation. But the issue about talking to Iran, I don't really think it's a sincere, negotiations that is targeted towards solving the situation with Iran. It looks like more like, some very pathetic attempt to search for some ways to reduce violence in Iraq through talking to Iran, instead of talking to Iran about the Iranian U.S. issues, about the Iranian-U.S. bilateral issues. I don't really see the point of having U.S.-Iranian relationships discussing Iraqi issues, because if someone should be consulted about the Iraqi issues, I think they should be the Iraqis who are being systematically ignored. So I don't really think this is a sincere step. I think it's more political to try to frame the situation as if Iran has the capability to stop violence in Iraq, but it's refusing to do that. Maybe that will be a pretext for an attack on Iran and, accusing Iran of causing more violence in Iraq or anything from that side. But I don't really think that this administration has any plans to actually use diplomacy to reach to real solid results. It's more about abusing diplomacy to implement the militaristic agenda.
Well, and Riyad, from my perspective, if Bush really wanted to send a signal that he wants to build some sort of relationship with the government of Iran, I believe he would release those four or five diplomats who've been held since January when they were taken in Erbil.
Yeah, and or like stop threatening to use the power or attack Iran or stop, giving all of these excuses and...
You mean letting Dick Cheney go on an aircraft carrier just off the coast of Iran and issue more threats?
Yeah, and go around the region as well and go to Jordan and Emirates and issue more threats to Iran. These things are bad for the region. They are bad for Iraqis and Iranians, and they are bad for Israelis and for American troops in the region there. It's bad for everyone. These threats for an attack on Iran will not be in anyone's interest.
I couldn't agree with you more, and it appears that exactly that is what propels Dick Cheney. If it's bad judgment on all fronts, then he'll embrace it and double down and issue those threats in that unctuous Darth Vader style that we've unfortunately become accustomed to.
Yeah, this is important. Very unfortunate.
Yeah. Riyad, I want to take a break here, and then I want to come back and talk about an issue that you and I have discussed before, solo and also with Antonio Yuhas. And that is the American-led plan to split up the oil resources of Iraq, both the fields that are in operation and the larger reserves, which are currently untapped but certainly have great potential. I want to get your views on that as we continue. And if you have a question or comment for Raed Girard, he's with us for another segment, and we'll take your call toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right. Dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready!
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
You know, I,
the show on KRXA 540.
Traffic as you make your way home this evening. Looks like we have no major stalls to report on in the Bay Area. In fact, Highway 17 at this point looking rather nice. No, there was a stall southbound 17 before the Cats, but it appears everything is pretty much wrapped up there. Nothing to get too worried about at this point. We have some slow traffic, very slow traffic due to an earlier problem in San Jose if you're traveling down there. South 101 between 680 and 280. Also want to mention that we did have a problem northbound or southbound 101 out of Salinas, and northbound 101 we had some slow traffic from San Miguel Canyon at turnoff, so we did get a report from that from one of our callers. Other than that, we're going to let you know this report is brought to you by GM Goodrich.
Talking about Iraq, as former Senator Max Cleland called it, the 51st state. And the cost of the occupation continues into the hundreds of billions of dollars. We're closing in on 3,400 American service members lost in Iraq. And Ed Girard, you were one of the people who participated in a survey of casualties in post-war Iraq conducted by Civic Worldwide. Do you generally agree with the studies that have been published that show that upwards of 600,000 Iraqi civilians have been lost in this war and occupation?
Yeah, in fact, I just met with one of the authors of the Lancet report last week here in Washington, D.C., and because he was giving a presentation about their study, and it's a very, very credible study. They used methods that were used so many in so many other places around the world, and it's very credible, and they took a very big sample. The thing is that their study is way more credible. It's the same type of study, but it's even more accurate than the one in Darfur. Both of them come from the same background and the same school. But for political reasons, we never hear anyone doubting the numbers from Darfur, but the one in Iraq sounds to be, you know, under attack from all of the media and all of the doubts from, you know, all around.
That's a powerful point. No one's ever made that to me before. Thank you for that, Riyad.
In fact, the other powerful point that he suggested is that these types of sampling and getting casualties information from sampling, not from actual documentation of casualties, were even used to document, like, let's say, the casualties of the Holocaust. But if anyone doubted the number of the casualties of the Holocaust, he would be putting himself or herself in big trouble in the U.S., while doubting the number of Iraqi civilians seems to be fashionable now.
Now, Riyad, things are developing rather quickly. Before it appears to be ready for a two-month summer recess, a majority of members of the Iraqi parliament last week signed a document calling for the U.S. to end the occupation and leave Iraq in the near future. And one of the sticking points from the U.S. perspective, and Dick Cheney underscored this on his visit to Iraq last week, is we are demanding that Iraq adopt an oil-sharing agreement that essentially is dictated by the United States. And I find it deeply offensive on many a levels, and I would just like to apologize as one American to one Iraqi for what we are attempting to do here. But describe for our listeners the current proposal and how the oil would be carved up and how much of it...
We're sorry. Okay. All circuits are busy now.
Katrina, can you get Ryan back on the line? His cell phone dropped there. And in the meantime, Larry's on the line from Oklahoma. And we'll talk to him until we can get Riot back. Hello, Larry. Welcome to the program today. Well, we lost that line, too. Larry, you can call us back. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. 888-573-8372. In any event, as we reconnect with Riot, I'll just mention that from all accounts that I have seen, the U.S. is trying to impose an agreement that first and foremost will protect the interest of multinational oil companies, most of whom are based in the United States, and that, you know, we are attempting to pretend that this is going to be a way to pacify the different factions in Iraq by making sure everybody gets a piece of the oil pie. Riot, I'm sorry we lost you there. I was asking you to describe for our listeners the current proposal that's being promoted by the United States, if not jammed down the throats of the Iraqis, about how we believe, or Bush believes, the oil should be divided up.
In fact, we're speaking about a very big, complicated, new regime for dealing with Iraq's oil. It's a very complicated number of laws that come together in one piece. I think there are more than 40 articles in this oil law.
Mm-hmm.
And Iraqis in general and Iraqi parliamentarians are against this oil law, and we're blocking it for the last year or so, despite all of the intimidation of the Bush administration and the IMF and the World Bank.
Right.
The Bush administration and the IMF were threatening the Iraqi government that unless they pass it by the before the end of the last December, which is more than 5 months now, that they will be punished economically. Now, this oil law is being rejected by Iraqis because of a number of reasons. The majority of reasons relate to Iraqis thinking of this law as a threat to their national unity, because it decentralizes the major decision-making, and instead of having it just by the central government, it ends up being in the hands of all of the small provinces around the country. It threatens Iraq's sovereignty by giving authorities for, you know, foreign companies like Chevron and Shell and these other big companies to sit on the board of Iraq's Gas and Oil Federal Council,
mm-hmm.
and pass their own contracts. It's unprecedented in the history of the region that foreign companies sit on a foreign, on a sovereign country's oil and gas council and pass their own contracts and, you know, decide where the oil should go. The third reason is, as you mentioned, the hundreds of billions of dollars worth of losses that Iraq will lose to foreign companies in the next 35 years due to the very unfair and unconventional type of contracts legalized in this new oil law. So all of these system, reasons combined, in addition to other reasons, are preventing or making the majority of Iraqis oppose this oil law that was actually written by a consultancy firm hired by the State Department. It's called Bearing Point.
Mm-hmm.
And Bearing Point actually used U.S. taxpayers' money to write this Iraqi new oil law, which this thing is against existing U.S. public law that passed last year in the Congress that prohibits the administration from interfering in Iraq's oil resources or infrastructure on the long run. So it's a complete illegal, immoral, big scandal that you can see how strong the oil lobbyists are when like all of these things happen, and when the Minister of Defense, Gates, go to Baghdad to push the oil law. I mean, just see how strong the oil lobby is in the U.S.
And, Raya, just in 20 seconds, are any Democrats trying to fight this, or are they acquiescing?
The Democrats say that they are not for the oil law, but they are just trying to use the president's own benchmarks to hold him accountable. Yeah. I don't buy this argument. I think it's just wasting Iraq's oil and increasing violence against Iraqis and Americans.
Raed, I'm out of time. Thank you for your views today. We'll talk again soon.
Welcome. Thanks.
Raed Girar on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thanks for listening.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Before today, most Chrysler workers probably never heard of Cerberus Capital Management, but they're hearing a lot about it now. Cerberus has a deal to buy Chrysler from Daimler-Benz for $7.4 billion. WWJ Radio's Jeff Gilbert reports.
When this deal is finalized in the third quarter, Chrysler will be a privately held company, away from the spotlight and the pressure of posting quarterly earnings. Cerberus chairman John Snow says this will help Chrysler concentrate on turning around and expanding its business.
Our objective here is a successful Chrysler. And a successful Chrysler creates good opportunities for Chrysler employees.
Well, earlier the Auto Workers Union had raised concerns about this deal. UAW President Ron Kettlefinger now says it is in the best interest of his members. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
By executive order today, President Bush kicked off a global warming initiative. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller has that.
Under pressure from the Supreme Court, President Bush is directing the EPA and some other agencies to develop regulations to cut greenhouse gas emissions and gasoline consumption in motor vehicles. But he calls it a complicated legal and technical matter that will take time to develop.
Yet it is important to move forward, so I have directed members of my administration to complete the process by the end of 2008.
Now that amounts to the final days of his administration, leaving little, if any, time for implementation on his watch. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
Gasoline prices have reached a new record. The Energy Department pegs the national average for regular at $3.10 a gallon. AAA spokesman Robert Sinclair says refineries just can't make it fast enough.
There's plenty of crude oil. That's not the problem. The problem is turning it into gasoline and the very specific blends of gasoline that are used during the summer season in the United States, the so-called formulated gasoline blends.
He says the strain will continue as long as we favor gas-guzzling vehicles and keep driving as much as we do now. Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty has submitted his resignation. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr reports McNulty fueled the fired prosecutor's controversy when he testified before Congress.
In his testimony, he ran into a little bit of a problem with his boss because under questioning, Deputy Attorney General McNulty said that it was his understanding that one of those attorneys fired, Bud Cummins, was fired for a political reason to make room for a friend of White House advisor Karl Rove. The next day it came out in memos, Attorney General Gonzalez, who was traveling out of the country, raised a question about that and said, I think McNulty may have this wrong. There was some friction between the two top men.
Gonzalez has issued a statement praising McNulty as a dynamic and thoughtful leader. Mixed results in the market today. The Dow Industrial is 20 points higher to close at 13,346. The NASDAQ lost nearly 16 points, closing at 25.46. The price of oil up 9 cents a barrel. This is CBS News.
Schedule your television around your time with a free DVR upgrade from Dish Network. Introducing Dish DVR Advantage, the everything-you-need TV package for one low price. The two-room DVR comes standard. Plus, get over 200 channels, including local channels, and free standard professional installation. Call today, 1-888-499-DISH. Dish DVR Advantage. It's about time. Offer ends 5/31/07. Subject to change without notice. Requires $49.99 activation fee, 18-month commitment, and credit card auto pay with online billing. Restrictions apply, including early cancellation fee.
What are you really getting in most burger joints? Could be a bigger waistline and a lack of energy, too. So how about great flavor without the flab and fat? The new Subway Fresh Fit Meals fit into the American Heart Association's approach to a healthy lifestyle. With a choice of tasty subs with 6 grams of fat or less, better for you sides and a drink. The new Subway Fresh Fit Meals. Subway. Eat fresh.
Fat content refers to regular 6-inch Subway white or eatbreadwill.com and meds that contain fats. See store for additional nutritional information, including sodium content. Subway is a registered trademark of Doctors Associates, Inc.
Law enforcement officials are taking a closer look at the relationship between MySpace, the online social networking site, and sexual predators. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv has the story.
Attorneys general of 8 states say they've received unconfirmed information that thousands of registered sex offenders have profiles on MySpace and could have regular contacts with children. CBS News tech consultant Larry Magid says,
"The fact that there are registered sex offenders using these services is no surprise. The question is what to do about them, and there certainly is a lot of interest in tracking their online activity just as we track their offline activity."
The state officials are asking MySpace to remove the profiles of people known to have committed sex crimes. Dan Raviv, CBS News.
It was a narrow escape for an intruder who broke into a deserted police station in New Zealand. Authorities say the man accidentally locked himself in a cell. As officers responded to the alarm, he used a wooden chair to smash a window and get away. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by 4 trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
Hi, Dave. Larry here. Hey, next Tuesday, one wheel from every pallet truck is going to fall off. Strangest thing. It'll basically grind the floor to a halt. How about that? Just wanted you to be prepared. Bye.
In your job, you don't get warnings. So Granger's just added a massive amount of material handling products to help get you through whatever the day brings. We're adding products and removing problems. From casters and wheels to carts, trucks, and conveyors. We have what you need to move, handle, and store just about anything. Call or visit your local branch or go online to Granger.com. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
Hey, 4 years and 13 days since mission accomplished, the photo op. This hour, we talk about the plight of vets returning from Iraq. States has sent 1.5 million of its citizens in uniform to serve in Iraq and Afghanistan. Many of them have come back injured, either physically and or psychologically. Coming up later this hour, Mike Ergo returns. We started a conversation with him last week and didn't have enough time. We talked about his service in Iraq and how he went in gung-ho and came back against the war. He now participates in peace marches and protests. He also is battling post-traumatic stress disorder, and you'll hear his first-person account in about 30 minutes. Joining us first is Larry Scott, who is founder and editor of VAWatchdog.org. That's a powerful website. It's, well, it's the URL just the way I said it, VAWatchdog.org. Larry Scott served in the military and the Army and also was a DJ with Armed Forces Radio. He did Good Morning Pyongyang, I think. Larry, welcome to our program today.
Actually, I did Good Morning Seoul.
Okay.
When I was in Korea. Peter, it's a real pleasure to be with you. Feels good to be back home. Born in Oakland, raised in Berkeley. And it's great to be back with someone in the Bay Area.
Well, it's my pleasure. And where are you living now, Larry?
I'm in Vancouver, Washington, just across the river from Portland, Oregon. We're part of the Portland Metroplex.
Oh, great, great. Well, that's a wonderful place to live.
Well, I think George Herbert Walker Bush called it Little Beirut, if I remember correctly.
Well, he dinged us for having hot tubs and enjoying them, so, you know, you just got to get what you can. Larry, I wanted to talk to you about a couple of issues that you have been focused on. There was a report issued last week, and it got a little bit of play in the mainstream media, but they're too busy still patting themselves on the back for the Walter Reed coverage, and I feel that some of that momentum is being lost because we have very serious problems, not only with the military health care system, as shown by the Walter Reed issues, but the Veterans Administration as well. And in particular, some of the battle conditions that vets are returning with from Iraq and Afghanistan include serious psychological problems, traumatic brain injuries, and other issues that are related to post-traumatic stress disorder that the VA seems incredibly unprepared to deal with.
They are incredibly unprepared, Peter, and we have to start with the B word, and I hope people don't reach for their preset. But B is the budget word, and it boils down to a very simple thing. The VA is not asking for enough money. Congress is not allocating enough money for VA health care. VA health care is part of the discretionary budget. It has to be allocated every year, and it has been terribly, terribly underfunded.
Mm-hmm.
We find that veterans are waiting weeks and months sometimes to get into mental health clinics. When it comes to surgeries, they will wait sometimes as long as 18 to 24 months to get necessary orthopedic surgeries. And it all comes down to a simple matter of funding. Congress has said, no, here's the amount of money you're going to have, and, well, that's it. The problem really starts back with the VA hierarchy using antiquated data, not doing proper projections. By the time they're looking and saying, well, we need money for 2007, they're using data from 2003. It's an antiquated process. It has never worked properly. And now the chickens are coming home, as they say. They're starting to roost here because we now have these wars that have dragged on for a number of years. We're seeing not only, as you mentioned, the TBI, the traumatic brain injury, but incredible mental health problems, with some surveys showing as many as high a figure as 35% of our troops coming home with mental health issues. The VA is just simply not prepared.
Well, and we're seeing some of the indicators of the tragedies produced by this in terms of an exceptionally high divorce rate for vets returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, and even more sadly, a sharp spike in suicides.
Yes, the suicide rate is way up, especially for members of the United States Army. That rate is the highest it has been in a number of years. We're seeing domestic abuse, spousal abuse, child abuse. We're seeing excessive use of alcohol, use of illegal drugs. And many of these things tie back to emotional problems. You have to start with something simple here, and that is sometimes the military members are afraid to ask for help. There is, no matter what the military says, there is a stigma attached to a member of the military with a mental health issue.
Well, and in addition, isn't there command denial, where in many cases, and here I'm talking about active duty members who suffer from problems, and they're basically told to buck up and report for duty?
We've seen a lot of problems like that, and you'll be able to find that information on VAWatchdog.org at Fort Carson, Colorado,
yep.
Where basically they were told, you know, suck it up, soldier, and go out and do your job. We found this in the Idaho National Guard recently, where when the National Guard contingent from Idaho was coming home, the commander canceled a mandatory mental health screening for his troops, and his statement was, "We have no problems here." So not only does it start at the command level, but also the stigma attached to mental health. Many soldiers feel it will ruin their chances for career advancement. And even for those troops who do get out of the military, Peter, and then have a veteran status, there is still a stigma in our society about mental health issues. No, it's okay. Maybe I'm a little sleepless, or I'm having some nightmares or flashbacks, but they'll go away. I can handle it myself. Or many times they do it the easy way and self-medicate with alcohol or drugs.
Yeah, yeah. And so how would you describe the dimensions of the problem, Larry, if you can give our listeners a sketch of the depth of this?
If you assume, let's say we take an average right here in the middle, Peter. The survey I've seen that listed the lowest number of troops coming back with mental health issues was about 13%. Some say as many as 35%. Let's put that right about in the middle. Let's say there's around 25%. Okay? That would mean, with 1.5 million troops having cycled through Iraq and Afghanistan, that's about 375,000 troops and veterans who have mental health issues, many of them showing symptoms of PTSD. Now stop and think about small cities. Stop and think about 375,000 people in a population with emotional issues that, for the most part, are not being treated or taken care of at this time.
Mm-hmm.
It is huge. It is overwhelming. It is not being addressed properly. And when it is being addressed, it is being addressed without proper funding and without proper resources. And here's a perfect example of this. Right after Walter Reed, President Bush ordered Jim Nicholson, who is the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA. He said, well, you've got this program called Seamless Transition. Seamless Transition is supposed to help military members who have been injured, wounded, transition from military health care, like a Walter Reed hospital, and transition them smoothly into VA hospitals and VA treatment, no matter what the problem might be, whether it's a mental health issue or a physical issue. And the president ordered Secretary Nicholson to put together a task force and fix it. Make sure it works. Make sure these troops are taken care of, whether they're still on military duty or whether they're transitioning to the VA. I want these problems resolved. Well, the report came out a few days ago, and I'm looking at the report, and there's some really incredibly good recommendations in there, except there's something missing.
Money?
Guess what? No additional funding,
right.
No additional personnel, and I thought, now how could this be? Then I went back and looked at the original mandate from the White House. The original mandate from the White House says, and this is a quote, using existing resources. So here our VA secretary has been told to fix this incredible problem using existing resources. Now, if he is able to do that, and many doubt that he is, but even if he is, using existing resources means he's going to have to pull monies and people from other parts of military healthcare programs and veterans healthcare programs.
And I hear they're doing things like charging for parking in the VA parking lots and doing other things like at the bake sale level to bring in some revenues so that they can try to live within the current budget. Well, it's ridiculous.
You know, I haven't heard about that, about the charging for parking, but what I'll tell you what is, here I'll give you an example from the VA hospital where I get my healthcare in Portland, Oregon. And that is, their budget was in such bad shape, they had to close down a couple of operating rooms. And because they closed down, because they couldn't hire the doctors, the nurses, the surgeons, the technicians to keep up an orthopedic surgery rotation. Because those operating rooms weren't being used, that meant that two whole floors of a 9-floor hospital were going to be vacant because there were no recuperating patients to go in those wards. So to make money, what the VA hospital director did, he went to the university hospital next door, Oregon Health Sciences University, and leased them wards on those two empty floors for a little over $1 million a year to help beef up his budget. Now, that's a smart thing to do, but that shouldn't have been done because he should have been funded properly so that the surgeries could be performed and those beds are filled with veterans. Right now, and here's an interesting way to check the health of your VA hospital, by the way, in your particular area. Go to usajobs.com, which is the government jobs website, and look up how many medical jobs are available in the VA in your particular community. The last time I checked, which was a couple of days ago in Portland, Oregon, there were 111 listings for doctors, nurses, and medical technicians in one single VA hospital. You cannot operate that short-staffed and do it effectively. It just can't be done.
We're talking with Larry Scott. He's founder and editor of VAWatchdog.org. They're on the web at that same address, VAWatchdog.org. Want to remind our listeners in Eureka that June 8th is the stand-down for veterans, and we'll bring you more information about that as we get closer to the date, but be sure to mark your calendar. It'll be at the fairgrounds, I believe, in Ferndale. We'll take a break and return with Larry Scott. Coming up later this hour, veteran Mike Ergo talks about his own battles with post-traumatic stress disorder. You got a question? Call me now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
All right, everybody, let's take a look at traffic and give you the latest update here. Well, we are going to let you know that we do have a problem in Castroville on 183 southbound at Espinosa. It's an injury crash of three vehicles blocking lanes there. Emergency crews are actually blocking the southbound lanes, to be more precise. Freedom, Holahan at Green Valley, we have an accident there. It's on the right shoulder, two cars involved, minor injuries reported. And Boulder Creek, Bear Creek at Deer Creek, we have an injury crash. It's an overturned vehicle on the shoulder. We do have debris being reported there as well. Also have a problem in Salinas in both directions at North Main. The off-ramp closed from 6 a.m. to 1 p.m. daily, and this is going to last through Friday, May 18th. This report brought to you by Luxor Las Vegas. Your great Las Vegas getaway begins by visiting Luxor.com.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up about 10 minutes away, Mike Ergo returns, a Marine who served in Iraq and is fighting post-traumatic stress disorder. We'll hear his first-person account. And tomorrow on the program, a representative of Vote Vets is going to join us to talk about CBS News' decision to fire General Batiste for using his First Amendment rights to criticize the Bush administration. Thanks, CBS. We really appreciate that.
Technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road to hell.
We continue now with Larry Scott, a veteran and the founder and editor of VAWatchdog.org. Visit their website and you can get more information. Hey, Larry, you know, the radio show here, we get a lot of books that publishers send us. Some of them we ask for and some of them just show up. And one came in last week, and we've already recycled it because it was so ridiculous, and I can't remember the author's name, but it's called The VA, subtitled Best Healthcare on Earth. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen the book. I have not seen that.
Just the title alone leaves me suspecting its credibility in every way.
Well, you know, there's really an argument on that, Peter, and that is, from my personal experience, the VA has always been very good to me in taking care of my health care needs as a veteran. The VA, of necessity, because of underfunding from administration to administration, they have all shorted veterans and short-funded the VA. They become extremely efficient, 20 to 25% more efficient than the private health care sector. They've been able to squeeze more health care out of fewer dollars. So they actually stand as a model for some of if you think national health care might work, take a look at what the VA does.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you say the best health care, yes, that is arguable.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it mainly has to do with the waiting lists, turnover in doctors and nurses, unavailability of doctors and nurses, the long lines for surgery, and in many cases, long lines just to get in for a primary care appointment, which should not be.
Mm-hmm. Well, and really what's interesting to me, Larry, is that this whole war has been funded by a series of blank checks. And we wrote blank checks up until this supplemental when Congress kind of asserted itself and said, hold on to the administration. And to not offer the same kind of a blank check, or at least adequate funding for the services needed for these returning vets, I just think is criminal.
It is, Peter. And every year there is a bill introduced called Mandatory Funding for VA Health Care. This is where the VA would assess their needs. The money would be there. There would be no question about it. There would be no voting about it. There would be no arguing about it. What was needed would show up in the budget. It has been voted down along party lines for years and years and years. The Republicans voted it down last year and the year before. The Democratic members of the House and Senate are now renewing the issue. We're taking a look at two very strong leaders in the House and the Senate, and that is Representative Bob Filner of California, now
mm-hmm.
heads up the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, and Senator Daniel Akaka of Hawaii heads up the Senate Committee. Both of these people are in favor of the mandatory funding formulas for VA health care, and they're going to be working legislation through the House and the Senate. And it could become a reality. Right now, the way it sits, it would probably pass, but it would be vetoed by the president.
I believe it should be built into the funding for the war because it's a legacy cost that we will have to deal with for generations. Larry, I want to get your quick comment on the conference that you attended in New Orleans over the weekend, sponsored by the National Organization of Veterans Advocates. What was on the agenda there?
Well, thank you, Peter. The National Organization of Veterans Advocates, NOVA, are a group of attorneys who practice veterans law. and they practice law up at the higher court levels, the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, all the way up to the Supreme Court. These were educational seminars for veterans, or for attorneys, rather, who handle veterans' claims, issues of great importance, the complexity of PTSD claims, the complexity of brain injury claims, and how these issues can be resolved. Also, the VA's wonderful knack of wanting to deny every claim straight off the bat, which they do. And so the attorneys there were working together, developing new strategies to work with the VA and work for the veterans to get some of these issues resolved.
And was there any talk of appeals for soldiers who are getting a really bad rap out of the medical review boards as they are discharged?
Yes, there was a lot of talk about that. This particular group of attorneys deals mainly on the VA level of law and not military law. There are other attorney organizations that will handle military law. Most of those are former JAG, Judge Advocate General attorneys that work that. But yes, that was a topic of discussion, how the military has been notoriously giving low ratings numbers. In other words, saying, well...
Larry Scott, I got to stop here because the clock has run. Thank you for joining us. Visit the website, VAWatchdog.org.
Peter, it's been great.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention, whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
I'm Todd Hurlbert, and I invite you to listen to The Week in Politics at our new time, 7 p.m. Monday nights. We're Monterey's hardest-hitting political hot talk. We cover local politics, also tell you what's going on in Washington, D.C. And most importantly, we take your calls and find out what you think. So if you haven't listened to us before, find out what we're all about. Monday night, 7 p.m. It's The Week in Politics. See you there.
In these United States, you have many rights. You have the rights to assemble. You have the right to free speech in a free speech zone. You have the right to an attorney. You have the right to a speedy trial. Well, not if you're in Guantanamo. You have the right to privacy. No, wait. No, the FBI can read your mail and listen to your phone calls. America, where are your rights? Join Billy Sunshine, then we'll find them for you.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM, Sundays 3 to 5.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
We're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host. 34 minutes past the hour. During the break, I was just browsing at truthout.org. When you have a chance, drop by there on your surfing missions and take a look at a piece posted by Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, chairman of the Armed Services Committee, who is very clear that it is his intention to sharply amend the Military Commissions Act, which is what authorizes torture, permits indefinite detention without charge for detainees at Guantanamo and elsewhere, and in my view is frankly un-American. So I'm encouraged to see that, and I encourage you to read about it at truthout.org. About 2 weeks ago, Mike Ergo joined us on the program, a Marine who served in Iraq and fought in Fallujah. And when he went to Iraq, as he told us, he supported the war. And when he came back, he didn't. The experience changed his mind, and it also left him with battle scars and other issues that he continues to deal with. Mike Ergo, thank you for returning to the program today.
Thanks for having me back on, Peter.
Well, I wanted to complete our conversation because I felt that we had a good chat and talked about some of the important issues about your service in Iraq, and I thank you for serving on behalf of other Americans. But I also wanted to talk about the personal price that you have paid and continue to pay for your service. And you were preceded on the program just minutes ago by Larry Scott, who runs the website vawatchdog.org. And he enumerated for us that just in round numbers, based on the number of people who have served and the percentage of those returning with considerable psychological issues, it turns out to be a number of about 375,000 service members. So you are not alone, sir. And to put that in perspective, that's about half of the population of Monterey County. So for those of you listening on the Central Coast, imagine that every other person you encounter is a veteran who came back with battle scars from Iraq that are not necessarily physical in nature. So, Mike, talk a little bit about what you've been through and how you're coping with it, and to the extent to which the Veterans Administration or anybody else has been there to help you.
Well, like most Marines, I came back thinking all that was bull crap and about PTSD. And then shortly after getting back, I started seeing things that weren't there, like an Iraqi hiding in my bathroom, peeking out, or running from the bushes to the next set of bushes. So I just kind of let that go for a little while. And until I got back, I started noticing, going to junior college, how I would get in my car and start driving to school. And I've never been a person who's been anxious before. And I started getting really anxious about just being in a really crowded place like my college. Mm-hmm. And I started sweating, shaking, and a lot of times I had just to drive back home and stay locked inside my house.
Mm-hmm. And do other situations cause this kind of stress for you? If you think about, I don't know, going to church or going to a concert, do daily activities cause you to react that way?
Yeah, there are some. I mean, there are some crowds that I'm, you know, not nervous about being in. Maybe going to a baseball game, That's fine. But it seems to come and go. It's not, you know, every time I'm in a crowd. But Walking through the halls of my college outside, I despite the knowledge that I know that there's not going to be snipers on the roof or people setting IEDs in the hallways, but I still check. I still get antsy when, you know, someone taps me from behind. I really don't like that, that's for sure.
Did the shootings at Virginia Tech have a special impact on you in that regard?
Actually, no. It had quite the opposite, and I avoided saying anything about that. One of the effects, I think, of seeing combat and seeing a lot of it is when other people tell you about their problems, you tend to get irritated. And even as big a tragedy as that was, it really didn't faze me because I just said, you know what, I've seen worse than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously not in such a peaceful setting as, you know, a college campus.
But. Sure, yeah. And what you just said there a minute ago, explain that a little bit more about how you get irritated when other people are talking about their problems.
coming back and starting out of junior college, I didn't have too many friends that age. Most of my friends have been done with college for a year or two now. And just overhearing people talk about, you know, how their dog or their cat is sick or how upset they were that they didn't TiVo whatever show they were watching the night before.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they'd involve me in the conversations if I was sitting by there and kind of look at me like I was expected to respond. And just the audacity of someone to suppose that or to impose that on me to make me pretend like I was actually cared about something so trivial.
So then did the combat experience, and you talked about it last time, going house to house in Fallujah, did that leave you with this sense that, life is more precious and to worry about Sanjay's hair on American Idol or whether Paris Hilton is going to go to jail for driving without a license, that, you know, this is BS. It just doesn't matter. You've dealt with the real fundamental issues of life and death.
That's true. And when I wake up, I remind myself, you know what? I woke up today. I'm breathing. I have all my limbs, thank God. And today is going to be a good day. Not to say that I don't get stressed out and get really angry at situations that don't warrant that normally.
Mm-hmm.
But
Let me just share with you that I'm on this program, I refuse to talk about things, you know, like Paris Hilton and, you know, Britney Spears' haircut and, her underpants problem.
God bless you, sir.
You know, I just think that there's too much of that crap available and people will find it if that's what they want. But I haven't, you know, been in a battle situation, and I have very limited patience for that crap to begin with. So given what you've been through, it really must be heightened where you think, you know, where do these people get off? They're focused on such trivial issues, and given your change of heart about the war, I imagine you have a real personal sense of urgency to do what you can to end the war. And when you see people who are, you know, concerned about their Blackberries or their hairstyle or, you know, their nail polish, instead of being willing to join you in a peace march in San Francisco, that must be really irritating.
It is irritating, and I take a lot of deep breaths and remind myself that they don't have the insight that I do and that I once thought along the same lines. So, but it is, and it is somewhat depressing too, because to come back and to talk to people and say, oh, so where were you in Iraq? And I named the city off of Fallujah, and people are like, oh, that's a city in Iraq, or hadn't heard about any of the operations that my unit was a part of, which were really big.
Yeah.
And some people say, oh, that's still going on over there. It's disheartening to know that some people are just so willfully ignorant.
Mm-hmm. And when you're confronted by that, are you able to deal with it, you know, in an ordinary manner, or do you feel like you're ready to fly off the handle and maybe either, you know, raise your voice or get physical with some moron like that?
Oh, yeah, and it's getting better, though. But at first, I remember the first class I took was California history, and someone, we were studying how there were bounties placed on Native American heads, and it was basically state-sponsored genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And someone made the comment as she was sipping her latte from Starbucks and wearing her designer clothes that, oh, just like the troops are in, you know, are doing in Iraq. And, you know, just very trite, just summing up the all the world's problems in one little sentence.
Yeah.
Really bothered me, and it caught me so off guard, I was speechless. I couldn't breathe. I had to just get up and leave before I think I would have done something bad.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, I haven't had a situation where I've had to get physical with people, although it has come close.
Yeah.
But you were talking about the care from the VA, and that's actually, in my experience, been really good.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Well, I'm really encouraged to hear that. We're talking with Mike Ergo, E-R-G-O. He's an honorably discharged Marine who fought in Iraq and, in particular, in Fallujah in November of 2004, if I remember correctly.
Yes, sir.
So, Mike, talk then about the VA, because what we just got finished discussing was the very limited resources and that Secretary Nicholson has been given his marching orders by the White House to take care of the problem without spending a dime more.
Yeah, well, it looks like he has his hands tied. I think the biggest problem is just the lack of foresight by the current administration to not realize that with the increase of casualties and people with, you know, traumatic brain injuries and post-traumatic stress coming back, without increasing substantially the number of physicians able to care for veterans or increasing the facilities and anything like that is just, it's astounding.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I live here in Contra Costa County where I live right by the Concord Vet Center.
Yeah.
And they offer counseling. I get to go once a week. And I can call in or drop by whenever I want to. And in that regard, I'm very lucky. However, a lot of my friends don't live near a vet center. They don't live near a VA clinic or anything like that. And for them to have to drive maybe a day or so to get somewhere like that, I think that's what the problem is. And
mm-hmm.
big cities where they're just swamped, maybe like Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., New York, where they're just swamped with veterans coming back and they can't handle it.
Well, I did see a report about 6 weeks ago, Mike, that showed that the vets who are getting the best care are going to the VA centers that are in smaller towns or even in certain cases in rural areas affiliated with a military base, and that in the big cities, just as you described, there are huge backlogs. One of the other things that Larry Scott, who was on just before you told us, he's up in Vancouver, Washington, southern Washington state, just across the river from Portland, and he said that at the Portland VA Center, there are over 100 unfilled jobs for highly skilled surgeons and doctors and other medical professionals. And he suggested if people want to take a look at the staffing at their local VA facility, to go to usajobs.com. And you can just, I haven't been there, but apparently you can enter the area or the specific facility, and it can list how many open positions there are there. And I'll tell you what, let me take a break, and then I want to ask you about one of my ideas about the way to properly fund the cost of aftercare for those who have served honorably in the war. And this is a war that I don't support, but that doesn't mean that I think we should not fully support those who have served. Mike Ergo, stay with us, and we'll continue in just a moment. Listeners, if you'd like to talk with Mike, get on the line now. We've got available lines at 888-5-PETER-B. Toll free, you dial 1-888-573-8372. More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Music. May 14th, 9 a.m. to noon. Thanks for joining us. The Ed Schultz Show, where America comes to talk.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Salt means that our investigation turned up nothing.
Because somebody testified lying before a grand jury doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and to declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women for me.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you've retired, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. Got to catapult the propaganda.
Well, there we go. Let's talk a little bit about traffic as we got some activity hopping right now. All right, so CHP telling us about a problem in, Monterey, northbound on 1 at 68, right lane partially blocked with a disabled vehicle. Boulder Creek, we are looking at Bear Creek Road at Deer Creek Road. It's an overturned Jeep on the right shoulder, debris from the crash in the lanes. In Freedom, Holahan at Green Valley, we have an accident on the right shoulder, two cars involved, minor injuries as well. Castroville looks like southbound 183 at Espinosa, we have an injury crash, fire crews, paramedics on scene, three vehicles involved, and it looks like southbound lanes remain blocked there. And don't forget, statewide, we have a security alert. Keep yourself securely belted. Monday today through Sunday, the 3rd, CHP is doing Click It or Ticket. Support brought to you by Toyota.
As we mentioned, Mike Ergo served in the Marine Corps, was dispatched to Iraq. He fought in Fallujah in the fall of 2004, and he returned home a different man. And we honor his service and appreciate his sharing with us some information here, which is clearly personal and may be painful. And, Mike, I wanted to ask you just about this idea that I've mentioned this before, maybe you've heard it, that we have paid for Bush's adventure in Iraq with a series of blank checks. Congress just kept forking over the money hand over fist without really much accountability or paying attention. And it's shameful to me that we're now pinching pennies on the returning vets, on their medical care in the military medical system, and as we all agree, we need to be spending more on the Veterans Administration. And Scott Dick, who's a regular contributor to our program, served in both the Army and the Marine Corps, he pointed out recently that just in the past couple of months, one of the last few remaining veterans of World War I passed away. And what we're dealing with here is generations of individuals. Hopefully you will, find yourself healthy in a very short time and not be needing care for 20, 30, 50, or 60 years. You're 23 now. But one of the thoughts I have is that the funding for veterans care should be part and parcel of the funding for the war. It's an identifiable, predictable cost, and we shouldn't shortchange you and others who have served with honor by saying when you get back, oh, we really can't afford to fully fund the VA.
Yeah, I think that's entirely correct. And even for people who do support the war, they have to know that if young kids who are thinking about joining the military look at the current status of how veterans are being treated now, it'll have a huge impact on whether they decide to join the military or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you feel that you were taken advantage of, that you joined the service with a set of expectations that were sharply changed when Bush decided to invade Iraq and occupy it?
No. And well, let's see. I don't feel that I was taken advantage of joining the military at all, and probably one of the best things I did in my life.
Okay.
But I think everyone who served overseas or served in the military has been somewhat taken advantage of. And I think our president took advantage of all the sympathy we had towards September 11th and used that for his own political agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I feel taken advantage of.
Yeah. And when you see this the debate going on where essentially the funding for the war is a ping-pong ball being batted back and forth between the White House and the Pentagon, and everybody is saying, this is for the troops. We got to support the troops. Well, what's your reaction to that, Mike Ergo?
It's confusing, and I'm not an expert on foreign policy or economics or how these things exactly work, but it seems to me that if we were to stop the funding, then they would have no excuse or no way to keep the troops there. And to say that to stop funding the war would mean that we're just going to leave, X amount of troops over there without anything, without no new funds on, is just, I think, a ridiculous idea.
Well, and when you hear Bush talk about, for example, and he has said this explicitly, that the Democrats want to cut off the money that provides for up-armored Humvees and, flak vests for the troops, what he doesn't mention is that his administration failed to provide those for at least the first 2 to 2.5 years of the war and occupation. And now he's trying to blame the Democrats for that failure because this is equipment that should have been there from day one.
Yeah, that's true. No argument here.
All right, let's take a phone call. Cynthia in Monterey wants to speak with you.
Hey, Peter, the carnage in this war, it's really a despicable atrocity. And they get away with crap until the PR gets so bad. And I'm going to misquote Huxley here, but Huxley said the true tragedy of war is that, basically decent, honorable men are forced to kill each other for causes and reasons that have nothing to do with them.
Hmm. Mike, you want to react?
That about sums it up. I
can't really hear him.
He said that about sums it up.
It's like when we're killing the other person, and he's killing you, but George makes it look good, I guess.
All right, Cynthia, thank you for your comment. I appreciate that. So, Mike, as you have stepped out and talked to people like me and you did a front-page interview with the San Francisco Chronicle, what kind of reactions do you get to your public comments?
For the most part, I get positive feedback from that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people give me the benefit of the doubt with my views, whether they're for the war or against the war, just based on my experience.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, some people I've run across will disagree with what I said, and yet they've never served overseas in any war or conflict or even been in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And But that hasn't been the majority. And if it is the majority, they just haven't come forward and say it to me yet.
Yeah.
But.
And what about in personal relationships, family members, girlfriends? How do people react to your situation and to your courageous, public expression?
Well, I think my family's proud of what I'm doing for the most part. My fiance was very proud. She took the article and showed it to her classmates in a graduate program. And I think at first, I mean, my parents were definitely for the war, and they believed to support the troops, you had to support the mission. And since I was one of the troops, they definitely supported it. But as new evidence came to light, and I'm not sure exactly where they stand, but they definitely believe I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I do, and I want to thank you. You've really made an impression on me, and I just really appreciate that you're willing to talk this way, because I think people really need to understand the human side of the true cost of this war. It's complicated. You know, it doesn't boil down to simple black and white issues. But you help give people, I think, a sense of depth and perspective, and I'm very grateful for that.
I hope I can continue to do that.
All right, Mike Ergo. You take care. We'll talk again.
Okay, talk to you soon, Peter.
That's Mike Ergo, spelled E-R-G-O. I'm Peter B. Collins. Thanks for listening to today's broadcast. What do you say we meet back here, same time, same stations tomorrow, and we'll do it again.
We meet again. Happy trails to...
Hi, Sheila Gale here with 12-Step Talk Uncensored, Addiction and Recovery Talk, Saturdays 4 to 5, now expanding to Wednesday evening 7 to 8, taking shame and blame out of addiction. We take responsibility and treat it as the disease that it is. Great guests and great call-ins. Addictions, 12-Step Talk, it's about time. Now twice a week, Wednesday evening 7 to 8, and Saturdays 4 to 5, brought to you by Sun Street Centers, building healthy lives in Monterey County. Sun Street for recovery and prevention.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. 9 years after buying Chrysler for $36 billion, Daimler-Benz is letting the troubled carmaker go for a fraction of that amount, $7.4 billion. CBS News business correspondent Anthony Mason has details.
Daimler, the parent company of Mercedes, will sell Chrysler back to an American firm, Cerberus Capital, led by former Treasury Secretary John Snow.
Our objective here is a successful Chrysler.
And Cerberus is heavily invested in the auto industry, with stakes in Guilford Mills, the largest seat supplier in the U.S., and GMAC, the finance arm of General Motors.
Like GM and Ford, Chrysler is saddled with so-called legacy costs. CBS News correspondent Nancy Corda says their obligations to retirees and laid-off workers add nearly $1,400 to the cost of every vehicle they build.
Take GM, once nicknamed Generous Motors. Today, retirees outnumber workers practically 3-1. The company pays more for health care than it does for steel.
Toyota, by contrast, spends just $100 per car on its retirees in the United States. Slapped by the Supreme Court last month, President Bush today ordered federal agencies to finish work before he leaves office on new rules to reduce gasoline consumption and greenhouse gas emissions. The rest, he said, is up to Congress.
With good legislation, we can save up to 8.5 billion gallons of gasoline per year by 2017. And further reduce greenhouse gas emissions from cars and trucks.
The High Court, in a 5-4 ruling, blasted the EPA for refusing to recognize that carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases qualify as pollution and can be regulated under the Clean Air Act. The number two man at the Justice Department has resigned. Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty was a key figure in the controversial firings of eight federal prosecutors. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen says his departure comes as no big surprise.
There have been rumors about this move for months, ever since it became clear that McNulty's office was involved in the controversy over the firing of the U.S. attorneys. McNulty himself testified poorly before Congress, left more questions than answers, and just as importantly, didn't do a good job of preparing his boss, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, to answer questions about the firings himself. So 6 months later, McNulty and his promising career are both gone.
At hearings that open today in Malibu, California, Floyd Landis is defending his Tour de France title against charges he used performance-enhancing drugs. CBS News correspondent